So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
So, take a look.
Welcome everyone to Review Away. The name is officially stuck. We have our logo now on our Facebook group. It is set in stone. Way Review Away.
Yeah, that's right. Genius.
It's very clever. We do have some feedback from last week. A lot of people seem to enjoy the format last week. So some of the feedback we got, the first one from Scott Thompson. Hey, John, don't feel so bad. I have Ground Zero on VHS, too. Compared to a lot of the crap that is on today, I would give it a 5.5. I think later you should review the Bad Blood pay-per-view. However, I've recently watched both WCW War Games 95 and 96 and would enjoy listening to you and Way review one of those. So those are ones we can... We got a lot of requests for things to review. Heroes of Wrestling, I have found. I have the VHS copy, and we'll be doing that in a few weeks to commemorate the 10-year anniversary.
When is that? When is the anniversary?
It's October the 10th.
Ooh.
Yeah, so coming up. TikTok. I also, another request. I got an obscure request on Facebook about the A&E Secrets of Wrestling, which I also happen to find.
Very nice.
I taped that somehow, so I was going through old tapes, and I did find that. This one comes from Thor, who's a regular Law listener, and says, Dear friend, strangely enough, I've listened to every single Ask Away episode. I was a bit perplexed to see you two pose as two dudes with attitudes, though. Where is the attitude in Wei Ting? That guy is so mellow, it makes you feel like a marshmallow listening to him. If anything, you two should pose as the Orient Express. You as Paul Diamond, Wei as Tanaka, and Bring in Mouth as Mr. Fuji. I would like for you two to review WrestleMania 6. This was the first pay-per-view I ever watched. I snuck up in the middle of the night to catch it on Eurosport. I was hooked on wrestling from that day on. Nowadays, I watch at least two WWE pay-per-views a week. I try to get as much wrestling over on digital media before I eventually burn it on Blu-ray. A question for Wei. If you take an Oriental person and spin him around several times, does he become disoriented?
I don't think that's funny.
It's disgusting. He signs up Hulkamaniac forever, Thor.
Very rude. The God of Thunder should not be racist.
It's gross. If you spin him around, does he become disoriented?
Terrible.
All right.
But of course, Laura was referring to that photo that our friend Deborah took.
Yes.
That's on your profile pic, John.
It's a great picture. I enjoyed it.
Apparently, I'm doing the Shawn Michaels thing wrong. I'm supposed to be lifting my
arm. But the Shawn Michaels, you posed the way Shawn always did. I'm sure that was, there's just no correct picture. I'm sure that multiple times, maybe Shawn did it wrong that one time.
You could see the attitude from inside my head.
Yeah. Two dudes with attitude. And these two dudes are now going to review Halloween Havoc 1998.
Yeah. Originally, we wanted to do the WCW DVD, but you took a look at it and...
I didn't think there was that much really to review. I mean, all the reviews are out right now, kind of just covering it. It's kind of hard to review a serious documentary.
And the way we do these DVDs, we pretty much give a rundown of the whole thing. And I wouldn't want to ruin the DVD for the people who haven't seen it.
I got to tell you, after doing Ground Zero last week, I have much more fun looking at these old pay-per-views of stuff you've forgotten. I had this on tape. I have never watched this pay-per-view.
You really?
I had never seen it. So this was something else. Halloween Havoc 1998 from Las Vegas, Nevada.
I'm holding in my hand the actual physical copy, VHS physical copy that John Pollock recorded on his own off of pay-per-view. And this is pretty much proof of the childhood that John Pollock lived.
Yep.
Because I'm holding a Fujifilm HQ120 VHS tape, and on the front of the box is a very beautifully formatted, properly bolded, a small piece of paper cut out in a perfect square, glued, not taped, glued onto the front cover with the match list and the date of the event, the location. So, John Pollock...
Dude, when you have a lot of tapes, you gotta label, or else we'd be having a hell of a time finding some of these.
And when you have a lot of time on your hands and go to an all-boys school, I'm sure you...
It does help. Help when you don't have any girl issues when you're a teenager.
But we've all been there, John. We've all been there, so...
Well, let's go on now to Halloween Havoc 1998. This was built around what Tony Schiavone called the biggest rematch in history. What was this rematch? It was a match from WrestleMania 6 that Thor just mentioned. WCW was building an entire pay-per-view around a match that happened in another organization.
Well, why not?
Why not?
Why not?
Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior Part 2. Yeah. What else?
This is Snickers Presents.
Snickers was
the
title sponsor. They were talking about an angle they had shot this past Monday on Nitro where Hulk Hogan attacked Horace Hogan, and Schiavone asked how Hogan could attack his dead brother's nephew.
Yeah, I thought it was Heenan who kept doing that. But
oh, maybe it was Heenan.
Repeatedly throughout the pay-per-view, Heenan was just like, saw what Hogan did to his dead brother's nephew. Imagine what he would do.
And this would prove to be come into play later during this match. We then cut to the Nitro Girls,
which I thought was awesome
on pay-per-view.
Yeah, which I thought was awesome, John, because I don't know, maybe just because I'm watching this now, but like, I found a lot of this stuff while watching it 10 years later. I just maybe I felt nostalgic for it, and I really enjoyed even seeing the Nitro Girls.
Well, you got to see them about 7 different times during this pay-per-view come out and do a dance routine,
which I did not mind. This is the future Mrs. Hickenbottom.
Oh, that's true. She was there. Gene Okerlund predicts that this will be one of the greatest pay-per-views in history. That prediction would not be seen through. Rick Steiner came out for an interview.
Yeah.
He said that he's the hound in the pound and he's going to get down.
That's hilarious.
And he barked.
I wrote that down too.
Then we got Marcus Alexander Buff Bagwell coming out. This was 1998 and he was sporting a FUBU shirt. Yeah. And Wei, maybe you could give us a little background on the culture at the time, because FUBU was very big at the time.
For us, by us.
Is that what it stood
is
for?
What FUBU stands for.
I never knew that.
For us, by us. And I don't know, it was just hip-hop was blowing up.
That's back when those people wore the FUBU shirts and they wore the goggles on their head.
I'd never seen anybody walk around the streets with the goggles. Oh. But FUBU was very big back in the day.
For us, by us.
For us, as in, you know, people like Buff Bagwell.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. He told Rick, "I'm sorry that I've turned on you so many times, but give me one more chance. I want to be in a tag match tonight," because Rick was supposed to fight brother Scott Steiner. And Bagwell, who had turned on Rick earlier multiple times, of which the announcers even pointed out, "This guy cannot be trusted." Rick Steiner was a moron and said, "Okay." And Bagwell, all he did to convince him was say, "Look into my eyes. Do you see what's in my eyes? A guy who wants to beat up Scott Steiner. Rick Woof. Steiner." They started woofing woof, together. Woof. Like dogs. This was so lame. So lame.
Two grown men barking like dogs. That's all it takes. That's all it takes to gain Rick Steiner.
So all of a sudden, the big brother versus brother match was now going to be a tag match. Great. We go to our first match of the evening. Chris Jericho against Raven for the television title. Raven's gimmick at this time is that he's on a losing streak, so he's received the title shot.
Oh, yeah. Jeez, I didn't even realize
that.
Wow.
They started off great to really get you enticed with this match. Yeah. They cut the following promos, which made you really interested.
Mm-hmm. I went to bed at 11 o'clock this morning, and when I got here, I found I was scheduled in an unscheduled match. I wasn't informed ahead of time. Once again, forces working against Raven. Well, you know what? I don't feel like wrestling tonight. I wasn't told ahead of time, and I'm not gonna. You know what? Raven, since you don't really feel like wrestling, to be quite honest with you, I don't really want to be here either.
So there we have it. Two promos where both men said that neither wanted to wrestle on this pay-per-view against one another. Do you recall this?
Oh, I thought you were going to throw to the clip.
No, I've already thrown to it. We're already back. So Raven says that he woke up at 11 a.m. this morning, or he went to sleep at 11 a.m. this morning, got to the arena and found out he was booked and didn't want to work. Jericho came out and said, "I don't want to be here either," and said that he means ratings, so they're going to wrestle.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I understand your point, John, but I thought this was a pretty original style of promo. Two guys who didn't really want to be there.
That was a shoot, though.
Yeah. Well,
at this point in WCW,
I was very entertained, though, by this match. I thought Raven back then was a very, intriguing character. They had a good match, I thought.
Tony Schiavone had what might have been the line of the pay-per-view when he said, "We're going to do this on the fly. That's how it works around here."
What was he referring to?
That the match was just being thrown together, I guess, and just a state of things in WCW.
All right.
What else? This was a fairly good match. It ended with Jericho. Chris Kanyon came out to ringside, got onto the apron. This was weird, though, because Raven threw Jericho into Kanyon. So one would think that Jericho would be affected by bumping into a man unexpectedly. He turned around after knocking into Kanyon and immediately put the walls of Jericho onto Raven, and Raven tapped it.
That is a bit odd. Yeah, I didn't even realize that.
Got to pay attention to this stuff, Way.
Well, I was just kind of just marking out, I guess. The nostalgia was still very, very fresh to me.
We go to another promo. Hulk Hogan comes out with Eric Bischoff.
Hold on a second. Before we do that, Raven applied the Even Flow DDT on Jericho, so... is it ironic that Raven used the Even Flow DDT on Jericho, who comes out to Even Flow by Pearl Jam?
Oh, that's a coincidence.
It's not ironic?
I don't think so, because it's really not the opposite of one thing or another. We will double check, but that is interesting, actually, that you pointed that out.
Yeah, you should pay more attention to the music.
I know, I should. You pay attention to the music, I'll pay attention to Tony Schiavone's lines.
Right.
Hulk Hogan comes out with Eric Bischoff. This was such a nothing promo.
Yeah.
Bischoff called Hulk Hogan, I don't know what this means, but it's definitely not correct given how things are in 2009, called Hogan the Millennium of Family Values.
The Millennium of Family Values.
What does that mean?
Did he really say that?
He really did say that.
And
then Hogan buried Warriors promo saying, if you want to hear the Gettysburg Address, then you can listen to the Ultimate Warrior.
I enjoyed Hogan here, though. It could be the nostalgia.
Great delivery. There was nothing he was saying that of any relevance.
For the live crowd, though, and maybe for the audience, maybe that's all it takes, you know? That's all it takes. They just want to see Hulk Hogan do his thing, and he did it.
I groaned at this next match. We got Ming versus Wrath. This match was way better than I thought it was going to be. This blew away anything that the great Khali and Kane have done. For two big guys that can barely move, we saw Wrath do a somersault dive off of the apron to Ming, which by this point was 5 stars in my book.
Yeah.
Brian Clark of Chronic fame doing a somersault off the apron to Ming.
Mm-hmm. I thought both guys were really worked hard here. They just a good series of power moves, which they both should be doing. And then you really noticed a slowing down, though, towards the middle of the match when both guys pretty much kind of, you know, ran.
Which, when we say the middle of the match, that would be at about the 3-minute mark.
Yeah, this was a short match.
It ended with Wrath hitting the meltdown.
Yes.
Basically, he was receiving the same Bill Goldberg push at this time. They're just trying to push a bunch of monsters like this. Yeah. Tony Schiavone upping his one line from earlier when he just decided to go a little too far and said, "That's one for the highlight reel in 1998. Yeah. I don't think we should go that far. This was a very passable match with two guys who should not be having passable matches.
It was short, and that's a good thing.
Remember Disco Inferno, Way?
I do remember.
He was in the next match. Glenn Gilberti was taking on Juventud Guerrera, and the winner of this match was going to get a Cruiserweight title shot later in the evening against Billy Kidman. One of the worst things about Disco Inferno's entrance was that they would just cut to terrible dancing by white people.
Yeah, I mean, it really seemed like a thing in WCW back then, a surefire way of getting over, or at least something that they would give to guys without any type of gimmick, is just say, go out there and dance. I mean, they did this with Disco Inferno with Alex Wright, which we saw later on, Ernest Miller.
And when all else fails, bark.
Yes. And these guys don't talk. They don't talk into the microphone. They just dance, and that's how they get over. They dance in the middle of the match. They dance after their matches on their way.
It's
to
like
the
a ring. Ripple effect. Once one guy dances, the crowd starts dancing, and all of a sudden you're over.
That's how you get noticed in this world, just by dancing.
Disco Inferno. The third man in the ring here, Charles Robinson. What a head of hair this guy had in 1998.
Yeah.
This guy was.
He still did, but by the end of his WWE run.
It's thinned out.
Is it really?
Well, he's 11 years older, Way.
I haven't really
noticed. It's probably post-40 now. Hoovy, I thought, was excellent in this match. One of the more, I wouldn't say underrated guys, but a guy much like Teddy Hart, whose attitude has definitely curbed his progression in this industry.
Absolutely. In the ring, his talent's undeniable. And
Disco?
Well,
not a whole lot.
Well, hold on, John. Like, this is a... Disco won this match, and so
yes.
It's understandable why he didn't work as hard as Hoovy did. Hoovy carried most of this match, but because Disco had to wrestle twice in this night, so that's passable for me.
We saw Disco, he did a Macarena dance, which was big at the time.
Yes.
I hated that fucking dance.
I did too.
But you
know it, don't you?
I think everyone knows it.
Have you ever done the Macarena?
No.
You've never done it in your whole life?
Why would I have ever done it?
Wait. I don't know. Maybe you did like a
went to an all-guys school in high school.
But
would we be doing the Macarena by Los Del Mar? We were wearing FUBU shirts. For us, by us.
All right.
I'm going to try and find an old FUBU ad to play
good
in this show somewhere.
I want you, John, just, you know, maybe this could be by yourself in your apartment later this evening. Just YouTube the Macarena and try it out for yourself. I want to experience it. And then experience it in a room full of 30 people all doing it.
I'll do that.
It's an amazing feeling.
Disco Inferno won this match. Jumping spike pile driver by Disco. This came after a top rope hurricane run and then a spinning heel kick by Hoovy off the top rope. Hoovy worked very strong in this match. Usually when Hoovy was not going over, he wouldn't really put his best effort forward. But this was a very, very good performance, I thought, by Juventud Guerrero. Disco Inferno gets the win. So we'll see Disco later in the night. Then I got angry at this next segment, Way. Scott Steiner came out.
Oh, no. Before that,
what
we had the Nitro Girls.
Oh, I didn't note the Nitro Girls one more time after
this. We had
this.
The Nitro Girls do a chair dance on a chair.
All right. They danced on chairs. Why were they on the pay-per-view? Could they not be called? Couldn't they be called the Havoc Hotties for one night or something?
No, you can't do that. These are the Nitro Girls. And I don't think they took anything away from the pay-per-view. At the time, if I was watching it, perhaps I would have felt differently, but... Hey, this is cool.
So Scott Steiner comes out, and he wants a tag match with Rick Steiner and Buff Bagwell with the Giant. And he says, if you wrestle us in a tag match, we'll make it for the tag titles. I was very confused at this point. I said, what tag titles? These tag titles are so prestigious that Scott Steiner and the Giant are out for their promo and are not even wearing their titles.
Yeah.
I didn't even know if they were the tag team champions. I didn't know what was going on with the tag team championships at this point. J.J. Dillon came out, and this was just so ridiculous. He stated that, okay, you can have your tag match, but if Rick happens to win, then he gets a 10-minute match with you, Scott. Why aren't we just having the singles match? Why are we adding a tag match?
Because he wants to humiliate the Steiners.
This pay-per-view was just
Steiner.
Getting annoying at this point.
Really?
They started the show off by saying, we've added three more matches to the pay-per-view. Then they added this one. By this point, every match that had happened thus far was not advertised.
Really?
And one that had now been changed to a tag match where you weren't even guaranteed you were going to get the singles match.
Sure.
Typical WCW at this point.
I got to say, though, John, by this point, I was not entertained. I was entertained.
Well, I'm glad
about this whole thing, and maybe again, it was just the nostalgia of seeing all these people. Maybe it was the comedy of seeing Scott Steiner say, "Big Papa Pump is in town and he's ready to pound." but like, geez, like I didn't mind any of this stuff. I was really going along with it.
Next matchup, Fit Finlay against Alex Wright, and I miss Alex Wright.
Yeah.
His armpit dance was always a highlight. His music, he was just like this Euro pop dancer.
With a leather jacket. a bit of a trivia for MMA fans. King Mo Lawal happens to be a huge WCW fan, and actually, before his last fight, he had talked about, to Errol Hawani, he had talked about doing the Alex Wright dance on his way to the ring.
Wow.
Yeah.
Alex Wright had a huge impact on a lot of people's lives.
Yeah.
What did I write here? Finlay. This is a pretty basic match. Finlay's, of all the people on this card who you would guess would be still working 11 years later, there's a number of guys that I'm sure they would have still been around 11 years later. But being a strong worker, I never would have guessed Finley in 2009 would still be competing at a top level.
Totally. I mean, Finley back then, 10 years ago, Finley was old back then. I mean, how old is he?
He
right
had
now?
The worst hair imaginable.
They both had pretty bad looks. I think at Oxford, I mean, I don't know. In the WWE, like, they always took, I think, a bit more care for their even lower-end guys. But in WCW, you just get some of the shittiest-looking indie type of people that they didn't care about. But a bit of history here. They actually mentioned that Finlay ended Alex Wright's dance career.
How did he do that?
By breaking his leg. Steve Wright is what they...
Oh, Steve Wright, his father.
His father.
Oh, I missed that in the commentary.
Well, you should pay more attention.
This wasn't much of a match. It ended with Finley ran into the ring post, and then Wright hit a reverse neck breaker and got the win.
Yeah, I thought it was decent. I mean, pretty short. Pole tackle and a reverse neck breaker. And we go to...
Perry Saturn and Lodi.
Right.
Which was... Lodi, of course, did the whole gimmick where he would come out with signs, some of them with insider references.
I liked Lodi's entrance, the Dave Penzer, is that his name?
Yeah.
He'd announce, a man who claims to be from anywhere but Las Vegas, Nevada. Well, like anywhere but the city that he's wrestling in.
What a heel. He would reside anywhere
I
but
sense
this
sarcasm.
City.
Sarcasm.
This show just wasn't doing it for me at this point, Way. Perry Saturn came out. His new gimmick was he was a cross-dresser, I guess, because he was wearing...
I don't think that was a gimmick. I think that's what he was actually wearing.
He was wearing, like, this ugly...
mesh vest.
A mesh vest.
And a beret.
With an Army Ranger beret.
And a beret that Shivani claimed was worn to represent his dedication to the Army. So I think this was legit. This was before he was wearing the dress and everything. And he looked much gayer here than he ever did wearing the
he
dress.
He looked horrible. Just horrible. I don't care if it was 1998, the mesh vest with a beret, and he was wearing eyeliner, dude.
Yeah.
He looked horrible. This was just a squash match. That's all you can say this was. Lodi tried to leave at one point. Saturn came back, got him in the ring, hit the DVD, and won. This was just a squash match for Saturn to go over, which, you know, Halloween Havoc was one of the more, one of the bigger WCW pay-per-views of the year. It was like one of their... You know, the WWE has their big four or five shows every year. This was definitely one of their big ones.
Yeah.
And up until this point, I had seen nothing.
That's not true. I liked the Jericho Raven match. I enjoyed that. Finley Alex Wright was decent. And Meng versus Wrath was
Finley,
not that
Alex
bad.
Wright was like 4 minutes away.
Yeah, but, you know, it showcased both guys.
All right. We move on to the Cruiserweight title defense. Billy Kidman defending the championship against Disco Inferno.
Yeah. You missed the Nitro Girls again, by the way.
Yeah, Nitro Girls danced. First 5 minutes, it was all Kidman, and this was actually very good storytelling, I thought, because they built up Disco building up to hit the spike pile driver for a good near fall, because everyone bought that after seeing Hoovy lose to that maneuver earlier in the night.
Yeah.
Finish came when Disco Inferno went for a power bomb, but Kidman reversed it into a face buster and then hit the shooting star press and retained the title. This was a good match.
Yeah, it was good. It was excellent, actually. Disco was working much harder here than his previous
This
match.
Is probably the biggest push he had ever gotten.
Yeah.
Please recap what happened next.
Well, no, let me get to my points here.
Okay, go ahead.
Kidman was only 24 during the time of this match, so...
So he's 35 now.
He's 35 now, which is crazy to believe, because...
He looks very young.
He's
here.
A kid.
Yeah, man.
Yes. But, like, what happened to him? This guy, like, had so much potential... Why did he not succeed in the WWE?
Well, he's a trainer now at Florida Championship Wrestling. He's training the next generation of kids. The next Disco Infernos are coming up through Billy Kidman. Because Florida, they're just churning out talent like you wouldn't believe.
But this guy was supposed to be, you know, a big deal. But what happened? Another thing I noted here was I actually thought the commentary was good. I thought Shivani and Heenan had great comedic chemistry. Shivani was really good as a straight man. And Heenan was excellent.
What happened next, Roy?
Next, we have the Conan music video, which I probably know what you're going to say, but I actually like this song.
Was it a good video?
You didn't even watch it.
I did watch it. I watched the first 2 minutes of it.
The video...
It just repeated itself over and over. Ashes to ashes and back to dust. And before I go, believe I'm a bust.
Ashes to ashes and back to dust. And before I go, believe I'm a bust. I mean, the video is not on the level of a Hype Williams directed a big budget masterpiece, but I mean, for WCW, it was on the level of the rap is crap and everything that they'd done.
Was this a WCW produced video, or was this done outside of WCW?
I believe it's WCW produced, because who's gonna play a Conan video and they put NWO all in it and all that? Now I gotta say, like, I like the song. I thought the beat was awesome at the time, and I still think it's good. But I don't know how much rapping Conan actually does here.
It was all the other guy.
It was all the other guy, but like...
whose name we don't know.
Yeah, whose name is not advertised. And the name of the song is not even advertised. But Conan, I don't even know if he knows the words to the song, because throughout the whole video, he knows the chorus, but like throughout the verse, he just... You could see in the video, he puts the mic really close to his mouth, so you don't really see his mouth... mouthing any of the words, so I don't even know if Conan knows a lot of the words in this song. But nonetheless, I think it's a dope beat.
What did you think of Conan's match on the pay-per-view?
What match?
Exactly.
What does that have to
he's
do with
this
that?
Big star, and he's not even on the pay-per-view.
You don't have to have a match on a pay-per-view to have your music showcased.
They're pushing this guy as something who's succeeded outside of the company, and he can't even do a promo on the pay-per-view. Can't do. He has no presence other than a music video.
Do people?
We got to make time for Alex Wright and Lodi. Lodi got a payoff on this pay-per-view, and Conan did not.
I don't know. I didn't really have any desire to see Conan come out and speak.
He could have done this live way. That would have been.
I don't
something.
Know if he could have.
That would have been fantastic.
I really don't think he could have pulled this off live.
Okay, the big tag match was next way. Scott Steiner and the Giant, who apparently are the tag team champions, defending against these barking idiots of Rick Steiner and Buff Bagwell. Giant came out to the ring smoking a cigarette.
Yeah, what the hell is that? Why did he do that?
God, did he look out of shape. Like, we've seen him at some bad weight in the WWE. Never. He just looked like a plump as shit.
I completely disagree. Completely disagree.
You think he looked good here?
I thought he looked...
Dude, did you see the size of his ass? Like, this was before he got liposuction. When he
have you seen
WWE.
Him in 2003 in WWE?
Oh, he's not this fat.
Yeah, he...
Dude, he's way fatter.
Were you kidding me?
Yeah.
No, you compare some pictures, John.
I will.
In 2000, mid-2000...
He looks more
WWE.
Built because he's got, like, long hair. But he...
No.
Nah.
He's much slimmer. Big Show was huge.
Okay, we'll look at pictures. When, I could be wrong, and if I am, I will apologize, but he looked way fatter and out of shape.
Compare Paul White, his first appearance in the WWE at St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Compare that to how he was 3 years later in the WWE.
Well, he might have not been a clean giant at the time either.
Okay, well, regardless,
okay.
I think he's much slimmer,
okay.
Much younger at this point, even though he is smoking.
We go through... Rick, this match was pretty much Rick Steiner selling the entire match to build up to a hot tag for Buff to come in.
Yeah, shit.
And he attacks Rick. Shocking.
Tony
Schiavone even came in and acknowledged that most assumed this would happen. Like, no confidence in this idiot babyface, yeah. Rick Steiner.
Yeah. I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was hilarious the moment that he attacked.
It was just so predictable.
Yeah, yeah, which you want to happen, and then when it actually happens, I think it's hilarious. So Bagwell attacks Steiner and then just leaves the ring for the other two to beat on. And then the Giant goes for a missile dropkick, which takes forever. And so of course, by the time he actually gets it off, Rick moves out of the way. Scott gets hit, and then what's the finish, John?
Rick hit the top rope bulldog on the Giant, so Rick Steiner won the tag titles.
Rick Steiner won the tag titles, and I thought this was
I am pretty sure that him winning the tag titles by himself led to him picking Judy Bagwell as his partner, because remember, she was once the tag champion?
No, I do not remember that, but
yeah,
fuck.
But that's where terrible. This leads to. Rick Steiner names Buff Bagwell's mother as his partner.
But John, the crowd was... hot for this.
They were hot for this match. And then this did lead to Rick versus Scott. So they did deliver the advertised match. Buff Bagwell returned during the singles match wearing a suit.
And a Bill Clinton mask.
Dumb.
Yeah, I didn't really understand the Bill Clinton match. The mask. But the match was By this time, the two of them, the Steiners, had wrestled a good, what, like 10 minutes? And so they were
These
pretty,
two should never be working this long.
They were pretty gassed, and everything was quite sloppy. But Rick Steiner was built to look like Superman here.
He was, one again with a top rope bulldog, so they were pushing this guy as hard as they can. Too bad they booked him like an idiot with Buff Bagwell. But nonetheless, he is the tag champion, and he defeats Scott Steiner. So Rick was definitely getting the big push as they got him ready for Judy Bagwell.
Yeah, crowd was hot, and I actually didn't mind this at all.
Then we went to this following promo to build up Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, built around Scott Hall's drinking problems.
He's had a lot of personal problems. He wasn't in the right frame of mind. I know he'd been manipulated.
Scott Hall let him down.
What could have caused this?
You know that I went through a little personal crisis, and I lost a lot of money.
Bring your big 7-foot butt down here, and we're going to get it on, big fella.
I'm going to say the words to you that hit a nerve like nothing else. It's last call!
Yeah. I actually forgot about this. So Hall was pretty much had the whole drinking thing out in the open. He walked out with a glass of something.
So this was art imitating life.
Like, at this time, was he really... did these problems actually come out?
He was definitely having issues around the same time, because he... Going back to, like, 97, he missed significant time in WCW to go to rehab. And then 98, I don't know if he had was on the wagon or off the wagon. I mean, with Scott Hall, it's always been back and forth, but they decided to make a storyline.
Yeah, and who are the people to decide to let's turn this guy's real serious problem into a money-making storyline?
Bischoff. Hall is an alcoholic. That's the feud. During this match, I could not believe I did start laughing when Nash had Scott Hall in the corner and was delivering elbows and then would yell at him, "Want a drink?" And then he'd elbow him. "How about a double?" And he'd hit him with two elbows. What a prick. I would not want to be this man's friend at all. If I was an alcoholic you started just elbowing me in the face, mocking my drinking problem,
no,
I'd hate
yeah.
you.
That's mean, what he did.
So...
It was a really shitty slow match.
This was horrible. Nash delivered two power bombs, and then
very
Hall
sloppy looking power terrible. Bombs that were very dangerous.
Hall then just got out of the ring and left, and it was a count out finish. Nash wins by count out.
Yeah. Oh, before that, he does the DX crotch chops.
For the group that is not part of WCW at the time. So clearly, this match screamed that neither guy was willing to do a job, and here you were on a big pay per view without a clean finish. Awesome.
Yeah. It definitely left the crowd a bit flat, you know, to just have a count-out finish like that.
What did we get? Another Nitro Girls segment? What happened after this match?
I don't think there was another Nitro Girls segment. After this, we go to Bret Hart versus Sting.
Yes, for the United States title, Bret Hart was defending the championship against Sting.
Yeah. To me, this was like supposed to be a dream match. I mean, you have two guys here who...
The masters of the sharpshooter in
exactly.
each promotion.
They're natural rivals. I mean, it's like when they had Marvel versus DC, and then like they put the Flash against Quicksilver. It's like two guys with the same powers going at it. So I had big expectations for this match.
And did they live up to expectations, Way? Because this one was not booked to go too long and ended with a terrible ref bump where Sting accidentally elbowed referee Billy Silverman and... Bret Hart went to go help Billy Silverman by leg-dropping him.
Yeah.
And then beat the shit out of Sting with a bat and applied the sharpshooter. And Silverman came to, and that was the match. Bret Hart wins.
Yeah, I mean, no, it did not live up to expectations because I was expecting more of a, you know, just a very typical technical matchup between the two. But it seemed to be a match that focused more on Bret's heel work and a lot of gimmicks. Including the weapons and the bats and the ref bumps and all that. So it was really not the type of match that I was hoping for, but I guess they're trying to advance storyline. What did I say? Oh, I just have a bit of a gripe here. Like, at the beginning, you see a woman holding... This is like a middle-aged, or at least like a 30-year, 40-year-old woman holding a sign that reads, "Sting, give Hart the Scorpion." And the Scorpion is spelled Scorpion. I mean, figure if you're like a grown woman, you probably have children. If you plan on taking the effort to make a sign to hopefully have it shown on national TV, at least take the effort to check a dictionary to learn how to spell scorpion.
Going to give wrestling fans a bad name if that reputation.
We're all the
continue.
Smart wrestling fans, honestly, John.
Not in Las Vegas. Anywhere but Las Vegas, where Lodi resides. Yes. My gripe here is that, as you said, Sting and Bret Hart in 1998, definitely having the potential to be a very, very strong match in the ring. Mm-hmm. They were given 10 minutes. Mm. 10 minutes on a match where, on a show where you added three matches at the last minute. You made a tag match out of the Rick Steiner-Scott Steiner match, and you keep Sting and Bret Hart at 10 minutes. Could you not have given these guys an extra 10 minutes and just told Perry and Lodi that, hey, we're going to put this squash match on Nitro tomorrow night? Did Alex Wright and Finlay have to be on this match, on this show?
They did not have to be on the show, no. This show...
We had to make time for the next match, which was perhaps the worst match I've ever seen on a main event in a pay-per-view.
By this point, John, we had come up to about 2 hours and 30 minutes in the pay-per-view with two main events left, and definitely this was a long, long pay-per-view.
And a note that we should throw in there just for history's sake. Everyone talks about how this is the infamous pay-per-view that got cut off because they went over the pay-per-view time. What WCW had done prior was they had contacted certain cable companies and got their window extended so the show would go 3.5 hours. The problem was they didn't contact all of the cable companies to alert them of this change, and thus at the 3-hour mark they got cut off. Mm. And that's why a lot of people never saw the Bill Goldberg match against Diamond Dallas Page.
Mm-hmm. Thankfully, though.
We did. This tape got everything. So thankfully we were not out in the cold. But the next match, one I've never seen, Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior 2.
Oh, yeah. This,
what, first of all,
Tony
Wei,
Schiavone,
tell us your thoughts of the first match, Wei.
I've only seen the highlights of the first match. I had not even seen the whole WrestleMania 6 pay-per-view. So,
well, let me just say it blows this one away, which isn't saying much.
Yeah, I mean, think about the crowd, too, though.
Oh, my phone's going off.
Yeah, but, well... What is that theme song, by the way? What is your ring?
It's the Dallas theme song, the old TV show, Dallas.
Oh, God.
I'll turn this off.
Turn it off.
Okay.
But, like, think about the crowd, too. The atmosphere, I mean, of the Sky Dome compared to the MGM Grand. I think that would make a big difference.
I don't think that made a huge difference in how this match was executed. We saw every stall imaginable incorporated into this match. We saw the longest test of strength I have ever seen. In some great booking coming off the last match with Sting and Bret Hart, we had Hogan attack the referee. Then they built to the finish, Wei, and what a finish this was. It was scheduled to be Hogan lighting flash paper and blinding the eyes of the Ultimate Warrior. However, as you will hear right here, that's not exactly what happened.
Hogan's got something. He's digging out here.
It's a lighter.
What was that? Is that like a fireball or something that he attempted to throw at the Warrior?
He tried to blind him.
He tried to blind
him. He was going to burn that man.
That's what he was going to do.
Oh, is the Warrior ever lucky?
Oh, boy, you're not kidding, fans. That's how deep-rooted this hatred is.
What a tragedy that could have
been. That would have been horrible.
Yes, they botched the finish. So the paper blew out in Hogan's hand. And Hogan and Warrior, probably two of the least improv-skilled performers, had to find a new finish. This sucked, Wei. This was so horrible.
This was a pretty shitty match. What I noticed here was just... and then Horace came by.
Horace came. So on the same night, they did the Buff Bagwell angle. All night long, they talk about Hogan destroying his dead brother's son on Nitro. Horace comes out and attacks the Ultimate Warrior.
With the shittiest looking chair shot that I had ever seen. Hits, holds the chair, like in the middle of the chair, with no leverage at all, just basically taps Warrior's back. And then Schiavone claims he hit Warrior's head and then knocked Warrior out for the finish. But
And then Hogan gets his win back 8 years later after WrestleMania 6.
This match was basically just almost like a rehashed bunch of ideas from all the matches previous. We had Bagwell's heel turn done again here, ref bumps. The giant fucking up again. So this was just...
This was one of the worst matches I've ever seen on a major pay-per-view. This was the co-main event. The only thing I was shocked was that this match didn't go on last. It would have saved the company.
I was thoroughly...
If people had not seen this match.
Yeah, and then at the end of the match, they take a thing of gasoline out and they proceed to pour gasoline on the Warrior.
I was fast forwarding at this part. I didn't even see that. They poured gas on him.
They poured gas on him, and then the officials came out and took him away. But Heaton the whole time was like, Shivani, we could have imagine what we could have avoided here. We avoided a huge disaster. A man being burnt alive.
Could you imagine if they just sat there and let Warrior burn? This was his last appearance, by the way, everyone, in WCW. He never returned after this.
What a run he had.
Great. The One Warrior Nation.
Yeah.
Horrible. We then go to the main event. Bill Goldberg defending the WCW Championship against Diamond Dallas Page.
The limo driver from WrestleMania 6.
Yes! There. Well, what a tie-in.
Now he's main eventing.
The limo driver against Bill Goldberg, the man who was put out of action for a year by a limo when he decided to punch it in.
There you go.
After watching the last match, Way, this was 8 stars.
Yeah.
In comparison.
This was a good match.
Bill Goldberg did a standing backflip.
Did he really? Wow. First of all, did you fast forward to the intro, the Michael Buffer intro?
Yep.
You missed a gem, because not only did Michael Buffer do his announcement, he says,
it's time for the WCW NWO Halloween Havoc final match of the evening. Sanctioned by the Nevada State Athletic Commission, Chairman Dr. Elias Ganem. Commissioners Luther Mack, Lorenzo Fertitta, Glenn Carano, and Dr. James Nave. Executive Director Mark Ratner. Physicians in attendance are Dr. Margaret Goodman and Dr. William Berliner.
Are you kidding
me? Yeah, probably the only time you'll ever hear the name Lorenzo Fertitta mentioned on a wrestling event.
That's awesome. But fuck, I am never fast-forwarding through another intro, John, by Michael Buffer.
That's part of the goal.
Lorenzo Fertitta, Glenn Carano, and who would have been?
Mark Ratner, I think.
And that Mark Ratner. Wow.
This is the gold that happens. This is what I watch for, actually. Forget the matches. It's the stuff in between the matches. That's
way better than anything on the whole pay-per-view.
But yeah, by now it had been about 3 hours and 7 minutes before this match started.
Wow.
Go ahead.
I was pretty tired. I didn't even take notes during this match. I watched this at like 3 in the morning. But as I mentioned, the backflip by Goldberg was quite the... the guy was 265 at the time, 270. Yeah. So, I mean, very impressive. Yeah. DDP is a guy who he always gets a bad rap. It's someone who worked really, really hard. He would script his matches heavily, but, I mean, it worked. He was very over at this time. And he put over Bill Goldberg clean, which was the right finish as they were building towards... Starcade, they were at this point building for Goldberg and Kevin Nash.
Yeah.
But this was 2 months before Goldberg lost his first match, so he was still really hot at this time. And it was a good finish. I was glad that this closed the show instead of Hogan and Warrior, because at this time, you would have expected Goldberg and DDP to go on second from the top.
I was expecting that, and to see the matches that happened with both with all four guys, I'm very thankful this finished it. Goldberg, I mean, say what you will about Goldberg, but like... His in-ring charisma is undeniable.
Oh, yeah.
He is as popular as he is because he just looks the part. And very stiff-looking offense, which I'm sure a lot of times felt very stiff as well. But crowd was nuts. When DDP hit that diamond cutter and they thought he was going to win, the crowd was insane.
This was a very strong crowd, and considering all they had sat through, this was 3 hours into the show, still hot for the main event. It really is a testament to... how over your main event performers were at this time.
Two original WCW guys. Nobody they brought over from the WWE. And, this was a good main event. Shivani ends the pay-per-view off by saying, with Paige and Goldberg shaking hands, hugging, Shivani says, it's not about sending people to hospital. This is what it's about. It's not about sending people to the hospital. It's not about trying to burn people. It's about one-on-one competition for the
title. It's not about trying to burn people.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, no one saw this match because it cut off on the pay-per-view. However, they did replay this match the next night on Nitro.
Oh, they did.
And it was watched by a ridiculous amount of people on free television
next night.
So
that's smart.
That's WCW Halloween Havoc. Out of 10 way, I'm giving this one I'm going to say a 4.
Wow. John,
main event was really solid. Some of the undercard stuff, but man, there was just too much unnecessary stuff. And I even feel dirty giving it a 4, knowing that Hogan and Warrior was on this. This was one of the worst matches I've seen in my life. This was, I would rank this lower than Jenna Maraska, Charmel, because these are two proven headline performers. And I don't care how much you say about, well, These guys can draw. It doesn't matter what they can do in the ring. This was an embarrassment of a
wrestling
match.
Yeah, but
John,
what are you expecting from Warrior versus Hogan?
At least shades of what they had done 8 years prior. It's not like this is... It's 2009 and Hulk Hogan is getting set for a tour of Australia.
Yeah.
11 years after this atrocious match.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, in 1998, Hulk Hogan should have been able to put together something better than what this match provided.
Well, I had a...
This was horrible. Around it. Don't book... flash paper finish when the guy can't light flash paper. He's probably never done it in his life before. So stupid. I hated that match.
I think I had a drastically different viewing of this pay-per-view than you did. I mean, we talked about our grading scale last week. Am I grading this from my 1998 eyes or my 2009 eyes? And from my 2009 eyes, this pay-per-view deserves an 8 out of 10.
An 8?
An 8 out of 10, because I was thoroughly entertained throughout the whole thing. By the nostalgia, by Hogan versus Warrior, I was not expecting anything from it. I was expecting a shit match, and that's what I got. And I was entertained by it.
All right, an 8 out of 10 and
an
4
out
of 10. So maybe we're going to have to average it. So then overall, the Ting Pollock review gives us a 6 out of 10.
We don't have to average it. We can.
Okay, well, that's our review. We should post all our reviews. We should put on the Facebook thing, so each event will put down our rankings.
I mean, John, I thought the undercard here was good. There was nothing terrible.
Yeah, it was okay. I mean, Raven Jericho, I thought, could have had more time. It only got like 6 minutes. I mean, Juventud looked really good in his match.
Yeah.
Kidman Disco I would have much rather Kidman and Hoovy. I would have condensed it into one match and give those two some time. I would have preferred that. Nash and Hall was a wash. Everything with Rick Steiner, I'm sorry. I've never been a fan of him as a performer. So watching him for 20 minutes straight selling and then going over.
He was booked well, though.
He was booked well, but it didn't mean he was much in the ring. And neither was Scott Steiner or the Giant or Buff Bagwell.
Okay.
I don't know. I just can't get... And Bret Hart's Sting, I think you had to have been underwhelmed by that.
My biggest gripes with the pay-per-view were, first of all, its length. This whole thing was 3.5
hours.
Way too long. Way too long. There were too many ref bumps, and the NWO... It was way too predictable. Two NWO members did the same heel turn in this whole pay-per-view.
The biggest pleasant surprise on this card, Ming and Wrath. That was a match I was expected to
really?
Be absolute shit when I saw it come out, and it impressed me.
It was short.
It was booked smart. It was booked short. It was like 5 minutes, and you were really pushing Wrath at this point. So there we go. Halloween Havoc. Next week, continue to send in your requests, your feedback to either Wai, at thefightnetwork.com, just in case people don't know how to spell your name.
What?
Or John at thefightnetwork.com.
J-O-H-N at thefightnetwork.com. Or Facebook. Facebook, both of us.
Yeah. Check out Wai's logo. It's tremendous.
Join the Facebook group. Type in review-a-wai, W-A-I. And, John.
Send in your request, and we'll figure out something to review next week. Are you happy with this format, Wai, of do you want to do a non-wrestling event, or do you want to how do you want to do next week?
I don't care. We could switch it up, whatever sounds appealing at the time.
Because I found, when I was going through these tapes, when I went to go find this, I also found ones like a 1999 VHS release of Triple H in China, on the road with Triple H in China.
Oh, wow.
It's a WWF video.
Jesus Christ.
It's called Our Time.
Wow, that's awesome.
So there's some good stuff, man, that we can... I do like having the pay-per-view. I do like going through these events because the nostalgia is fun.
Yeah, they are fun. I mean, I will say, though, that they are very long. So I almost anticipate some of these movies because I'm sure they'll be shorter than these pay-per-views.
Yeah, maybe it's why the fast-forward button is there. Yeah. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Ask Away. And Mr. Ting, what are we going to go out with?
Well, John, in honor... of Hulk Hogan versus the Ultimate Warrior number 2, I think we should go out to Manfred Mann's Earth Band, Blinded by the Light.
Blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche, another owner in the night. Blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche, another owner in the night. Yeah.
another runner in the night, blinded by the light, wrapped up like a deuce, another runner in the night, blinded by the light, wrapped up like a deuce, another runner in the night. Mister, told me I got what it takes. She said I'll turn you on sun into something strong. Little song with the foggy break. And go-kart Mozart was checking out the weather chart, see if it was safe outside. And little early birdie came by in his curly-whirly and asked me if I needed. Down, but you never got touch. She's gonna make it to the night. She's gonna make it through the night.
Please, and sneeze with the queen. difficult touch is gonna make it through.